Up next, UFOs, Bigfoot, underground bases, little people, and more with Mary Joyce on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let me tell you about Mary Joyce. Mary was with us about 3 years ago. Since 2008, Mary has been the editor of Skyships Over Cashiers website, which deals with UFOs and other cutting-edge topics. Her career also includes working for a Fortune 100 company, coordinating art and printing for talking children's books. And in that capacity, she worked directly with creative teams at Marvel Comics, Golden Books, Mr. Rogers, Bill Cosby's Picture Pages 2, and Steven Spielberg's E.T. book staff. Now, back in her early days, she taught an experimental non-graded inner-city school and later held promotional positions with the world's largest private printing company, an air pollution control agency, a community college as well. And now she's back with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Mary. How are you?
Hi. I'm real well. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Oh, it's so great to be able to sit back and have some fun talking about some of these unusual things that you investigate and look at yourself, huh?
I didn't even know I was going to get into all this stuff. When I moved to Western North Carolina, it became a hot spot of interesting topics. We have UFOs and underground bases and Bigfoot and little people, and it's kept me quite entertained.
You wrote a book called Underground Bases Hidden in North Carolina Mountains. How did you come across that story?
I think one of the things that's really important to stress is you get these kind of stories because people begin to trust you. And you rattled off the, you know, most of my career, but since I moved to North Carolina, I managed a health food store, and it proved to be a wonderful contact place. I only took the job because I wanted to have the freedom to do my own projects. And the first time I heard about the underground bases was in 2009, and there was a couple who had found out about the website, and they would periodically come into the store and very shyly start conversations about UFOs. And they did this over many months. And finally, one day I said, well, how about if I interview for you for one of these stories? And I met them at their camping trailer. And they didn't want to talk about UFOs. They wanted to talk about the underground facility at a place we call PARI. It's P-A-R-I. It stands for Pisgah Astronomical Research Institute. And the woman who had grown up in a family where her father worked for a classified, highly classified nuclear development center in the heartland had been under top security watch all of her life. And by the time she finally told me her story, she was probably in her late 60s, and she had never told anybody but her family about what she knew. And she said, under this facility is a city-size secret base that's totally self-sufficient and has everything it needs, you know, streets and roads and water and electricity. And she said that there were things going on there that people should really be concerned about. And so she wanted to get that word out, but it took her months to trust me. And if it hadn't been for that little health food store, that opportunity to become trusted never would have happened.
And Mary, you are not too far from Asheville, about what, 60 miles?
It takes about 40 minutes to get there. I'm to the west of Asheville.
We had a live stage show there, and I wish we would have known where you live. We would have had you up there.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Great. Tell us about the UFO sightings around that area.
That's one of the hot things that's been going on here, and that is one of the things that inspired the website. The name of the website is skyshipsovercashiers.com. We certainly have branched off into many other cutting-edge topics since we started that website, but it was the UFOs that launched it. And actually, it was an 8-year-old who really inspired us to do something with
an 8-year-old? What happened?
One night her mother got up in the middle of the night to get something from the refrigerator, and she noticed that their backyard was kind of really lit up, and she thought, that's awful bright for the moon. And she went and looked, and there was a low hovering UFO over their backyard. Now, this is up in the greater Cashers area. And the next morning, she was talking about it to her mother. So there's three generations of women in the house. There's Glenys Hanen, her daughter Devin, and then her mother. So the two adults are talking about what had happened the night before. So later in the day, when they went grocery shopping at Ingles in Cashers, the 8-year-old is suddenly interested in the sky, and she's just taking her cell phone and snapping pictures. Well, I got a call from Glenys, and she said, "You got to see what Devin just got." So I drove up there and got to see it right in, hot off the press, so to speak, and it was a perfectly shaped UFO, sort of like the saucer kind that's kind of humped at the top and at the bottom. And,
yeah.
And it was right smack in the middle of the sun. She didn't see it when she took it because it was blinded by the sun. But we were really impressed. And combining that with what the mother had seen the night before, we started paying attention. And they were constantly seeing UFOs in that area. There is a place there, because it's very mountainous, called Whiteside Mountain. It's a crystalline mountain. And many people, including myself, suspect that that might be like an omni for UFOs. And I've run that idea past people who have been pilots and things like that, and they said, yeah, that's a real possibility.
Now, these sightings, there's one you called the Blue Moon, of course, and all these other strange anomalies. Did anybody ever see any occupants?
I'm trying to remember. The closest that I can come to is that one night, Glenys, who is like on the edge of Cashers, she's in the woods, it's a gravel road to get to her place, and she was coming home after dropping her daughter off for some kind of activity, and she looked up on the top of a ridge or a hill, and there was one of those scout ships actually landed on the top of that ridge.
Jeez.
That's probably the closest. She has, well, that's not true. She's also had, it's almost like a ghostly image that appeared. It was like a man in a spacesuit that dematerialized almost as soon as she saw it. And that happened, I think, on three different occasions. So I guess that would be the closest to actually seeing a being. And we're not there. We may have lots of grays and things in this area, but the people who are reporting things to us are not having those kind of experiences. So I'm not getting reports about abductions. We are from other places, but not right in this area where we are. And it seems like people are making contact with what I would call a higher level of ETs.
Ironically, you're getting a lot of Bigfoot sightings too, aren't you?
Yeah, and there are many people who have done research in the Bigfoot field who have repeatedly seen Bigfoot in the same area as the UFOs. And from what I've been able to investigate, there may very well be truth to that. One of the stories was a couple. They were out at night. I don't know exactly what they were doing, but they saw these giant owls flying around where they were, and we're talking, you know, a huge wingspan. And the guy actually took a high-powered flashlight and shined it in at the owl, or one of the owls, because there was about five or six of them, and there was no reflection in the eyes at all, which he thought was really, really weird, and I do too. And then I read a book that I wouldn't have read if I hadn't heard about this experience, and it's something about the messengers, and it's about owls and how it's sort of like a memory that people are often left with after they've had some kind of ET contact and kind of a disguised memory. And again, that could very well be true.
In your area, tell me about the legend of Judicola.
I wish I could say it the way the Cherokee say it, but there is something called Judicola Rock. And I went out and measured it one day. It's probably about 20 feet across and 15 feet deep. It's at an angle, almost like a, you know, an artist's desk. And it's covered with all of these symbols that nobody has been able to decipher it. And the Cherokee haven't. It seems that it may have predated the Cherokee. And they call it Judicola because in the same area, they have a legend of the Judicola giant. And it was a giant that could, you know, bound across the ridgetops and things of that nature. Well, I've gotten reports from people in the same area who've seen Bigfoot there. And in my own mind, I go, okay, could the Bigfoot be the origin of those ancient legends?
What do you think?
I think it's a real possibility.
Yeah.
Especially since today we still have Bigfoot sightings. And we're getting some of this information from very credible people. There was a man who came here after he had health problems, and he was in the military and had to retire early. And he got a cabin in the forest here, and behind his house, the mountain went straight up, so he was, like, isolated. And one day he was hearing, he said it sounded like children playing in the creek that was down below him, and there's no children where he lives, so he was kind of perplexed by it. To kind of condense the story, he eventually saw a Bigfoot family cross the road, and it's like a logging type road, at night, and it was a mother, a father, and two half-grown Bigfoot. And this man, even though he had the military background, he also had a spiritual background, and he was trying to relate to the Bigfoot at a very personal level. It got to the point where he actually became friends with the male Bigfoot, and the male Bigfoot would come down when he was doing gardening, and this man would share some of the produce from his garden with the Bigfoot. They would not take his food except to a small amount, and so it's like they had an agreement. And so that's within a very short distance of this Judicata Rock.
You know, I believe that there are no coincidences, Mary, so when you talk about UFO cases, lots of Bigfoot sightings, you have to tie the two of them together somehow.
I think so. I really do. And then when you get these historic legends that support that idea in a quite different way, you know, it just adds more credibility to the whole concept.
Well, let's talk about some of these underground bases that are in the region as well. Are they tied into any of this, or is that separate?
As the crow flies, these places are not that far apart. I would say that there's definitely an ET connection, at least with some of these underground bases. I've written about five of them in my book. But the one that seems to be the oldest is the Perry Center, the Pisgah Astronomical Research Institute. And people who live in that area have seen UFOs fly in and out of a lake that's just to the west of the Perry Center. And I've gotten multiple reports like that, so you can't help but wonder if that is some kind of an underground entrance, so to speak, to the Perry facility. The Perry facility of the five that I've written about is the one that seems to have activities that would be the most concerning to us.
What could be happening at these underground bases?
Well, that particular one, the woman who first told me about it, she said that they were doing biological experiments there, that they knew they had mind control abilities, that they could wipe out memory with an electromagnetic frequency. She said that they had, I guess it would almost be like weapons there that could destroy things in the area. It was kind of a very dark picture that she was painting of the place. But it looks so innocent. It used to be a Department of Defense tracking station for satellites. And at some point there were a number of transitions, and today it is booked as an educational astronomical research center. But that seems to be a cover. You can't always get in there. It's not like a regular educational thing. Sometimes the gates are wide open, you can walk right in. Then we've had reports actually from people who are retired, well, I should say early retired Air Force men. And they were investigating the Perry Center for themselves, and they said there have been times when they've gone by there and there's been a guard in a SWAT-type outfit on, and then other times you can drive right in. So it's very perplexing. It seems to be what I call hiding something in plain sight. And when people have gone in there just sort of like regular tourists, they find it is all the equipment's like outdated. And when this there was three people I think that went in there at one time, and they said, you know, it just looked staged. Everything was outdated. So like I said, I call it a capstone cover for whatever's going on beneath the ground.
How many bases are under there?
Here in Western North Carolina, I've written about five of them. And they're all not exactly adjacent to them, but they are all...
How deep down do they go?
The deepest, well, the one at Perry is said to be six stories deep. We did have it confirmed by somebody with top security clearance. When we wrote about it on the website, he eventually got in touch with us and confirmed that the story was true. And I'm going to diverge just a little bit. He was quite paranoid about providing the information. And he actually had it delivered to me at the health food store when I worked there by his wife. He didn't even want to deliver it himself. And she said that he had taken the effort to write it in a totally different writing style than his own, so it couldn't be traced back to him that way, which I find very interesting. But the one that's the deepest is the one under Mount Mitchell, and that is said to be 20 stories deep. So they must start at the top of the
mountain.
That's
very
deep.
It
goes straight down.
That is very deep indeed. What kind of technology do you think is down there, Mary?
Well, I can give you a geez, I'm not sure. I know that when one of the men was heading up a squad of soldiers that were surveilling that mountain, they saw the mountain open up, and he said when it closed, you would never know it was there. It was that well camouflaged. And he, like I said, headed up a troop that were surveilling the mountain. And while they were there, they saw what he calls the blue hats come out of that entrance. That's the name he gives to the UN troops.
Let's talk a little bit about that, Mary. We'll also get into Little People and your other book called Tangible Evidence of Jesus. That's fascinating, too. I've got to ask you about that. We're going to be back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM with Mary Joyce, whose website, skyshipsovercashiers.com, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We are back with Mary Joyce. And, Mary, let's wrap up the underground bases scenario. What do you think is happening in these bases?
I think there's multiple things going on. Like I mentioned earlier, I think some of the darker side is happening at the Perry Center. We get confirmation of that in strange ways. One man, when he was young, worked for a nearby tree farm, and people who worked for the tree farm would see animals being taken in there in cages,
jeez,
which makes you wonder.
Uh-huh.
Also, when I've gotten close to the place, and each time I've been with other people and experienced something that they also experienced, and you get this kind of a disturbing feeling in your head. It's like you don't want to be there, and I call it people repellent. And people have also experienced a similar type of thing when they've gotten close to the facility beneath the Smoky Mountain National Park. So they try to keep people away. They try to make these things inaccessible. So I think there's multiple things. I think there's things like that going on that are mind control and kind of on the dark side. We've even gotten calls, contact from a man who was in social services, and he found he had two satanic ritual cases that came out of that same area. And as soon as he reported it, they took the case away from him and just shut him up about it. And he doesn't really know what happened about it. But whatever it was, they weren't going to let that information get out.
But it sounds like these are more human-controlled than some kind of ET base or anything like that.
In that particular case, I think there's interaction with the UFOs. We find UFOs around these facilities. There's another one, it's called Sugarloaf Mountain. It's adjacent to Chimney Rock State Park. And there's been UFOs and ETs seen around there. Some of the stories get, you know, quite intriguing. I can dive in deep into any of these subjects, so if you ever want me to, just say so.
One of your other books is called Cherokee Little People. We're real.
Yes, and again, I mentioned earlier that the health food store that I worked for when I came here proved to be a wonderful contact place, and I had never heard of Cherokee Little People until I moved here, and really didn't take it very seriously. And then one day, an elderly man who's well-respected in the area, and a World War II veteran, I think he was a pastor for like 40 years, and he said, no, they were real. And he said back after World War II, they were digging facilities at what is now Western Carolina University, which is in Cullowhee, North Carolina. And they found, you know, networks of these little tunnels. And all the tunnels were cut into this very dense, moist red clay. They were square cut, except the top was arched. And they were about 3.5 feet tall. And over the years, even rather recently, when they've done new construction, they will find these little tunnels. They also found little skeletons. And it's kind of ironic that a place that's an educational institute can be so dumb when you think about it. There was a scientist who had a little skull on his head, on his desk, and he used it like...
Well, maybe he did have it on his head, huh? You never know.
Like a decorative paperweight.
That's right.
And he just said it was a child's skull from one of the Indian mounds. And one day, I think it was just a high school teacher, was in there, picked it up and looked at it real closely and said, this is not a child's skull. It has all its wisdom teeth. I had tried my best to get the university to be forthcoming about some of this, and they do not want it exposed. They're sitting on top of something that's really wonderful, and they want to keep quiet. I think there's multiple reasons. One, it would change history. Two, it would stop their construction project. And so it's disappointing that they aren't more involved in that. They supposedly have the little skull in the forensics storage room. They also, again, this is reported by a person who graduated from the anthropology department, and said there were two giant skeletons that were also stored away, and they each had six toes. So that's another thing we didn't mention earlier, of strange things that happen in this area. And I'll give you, I think you probably appreciate irony, one of the oldest buildings on campus is called the McKee Building, and at the bottom level, there were three of these little tunnels that went out from the basement of that building. That is now behind a supporting wall that was put in later. On the inside of that wall is the anthropology department. So there's this thick wall, and it's the only separation between a really outstanding piece of prehistoric history and the anthropology department. And you would think that a truly educational institute would want to make that known.
Absolutely. Mary, what were the sizes of these little people? If these bones were reconstructed, how tall would they be?
Probably about 3.5 feet tall.
All right. Almost like a hobbit.
Perhaps, yeah. But what's interesting, George, is we get different descriptions of the little people. The most common one is that they look like the Cherokee, only just in a miniature
version, sure.
Right. That's the most common thing. But when the Cherokee first moved here from the Great Lakes region, they discovered these gardens that were well-tended, but they saw no people around. Eventually, they saw these little people come out at night and work the gardens and take the produce underground. Early on, they called these people the moon people because they came out at night. And these were described more like blue-tinted people. I suspect we might get that way if we all stayed underground all the time. I don't know.
Well, that's a good point.
And the third description is a little bit more like a leprechaun. And the Cherokee did not like the ones with the red whiskers, and they would try to kill them. And apparently they must have been successful. We had some moonshiners back in the Prohibition days, and they were building a still off one of the mountain roads, way off where nobody could find it. And they dug into a hole, what they called a pile of little people bones. And they didn't want their still discovered, so they just quickly covered it up. I tried to get in there with one of the elderly men who was in his late 80s. His vision was failing him, so it was amazing he could even lead me into the woods. But we couldn't get to the spot where supposedly this happened, and he was an old moonshiner.
These little people were more human type as opposed to something dimensional or spiritual?
Right. They're very physical from all the reports that I've gotten. Now, I hear about things that are more fairy-like and spiritual, but what I'm talking about is a very physical creature.
Are you still getting reports that they're being seen, or has that stopped?
Since I did the book, I was contacted by a man in eastern Tennessee, and he said he had little people living on his land. Well, I'm going, okay. And being, you know, the old newspaper reporter is always suspicious, but he kept sounding credible. And so Evelyn Gordon and I, who's the co-founder of this website, we went on a major trip and went to his place. And he has, 200 acres. Part of it's like rolling farmland along the river or pasture land. And then the 180 acres is just wooded. And he took me back in there. He showed me the entrance that goes underground. We saw, I got to see a little footprint that was up on the top of the hill. He said that was a place that when it was foggy, the little people often liked to go out and dance, sing and dance.
Jovial little ones, huh?
It sounds crazy, but... it's real enough that it scared some of the people he hired to put up fencing. They just suddenly were running off, and they didn't even collect their money. And when he finally ran into them in town, they asked him, you know, if he had ever heard anything like that, and he said yes. And I believe they were probably Mexican, but they definitely were from another country. And they were very superstitious and felt like he was some kind of a warlock or a witch or something. And they just ran away from him. But that's kind of an interesting diversion. You know, that kind of gives you a little bit of support for the man's story. He is from a line of what they call the Uchi Indians. The Uchi Indians were totally different than the other tribes. They were very European looking. And the more I investigated, it looks like they may have originated from Ireland many years ago and had come up from Savannah up the riverway. And his grandfather, his father, and he himself have been able to communicate with these little people. And since the little people look European in that instance, they wear the leather pants. And, you know, I can't help but wonder if they came across with the Irish that were fleeing Ireland after a major flood many, many decades
ago. Have you ever heard of duendes?
Not enough to know squat about
okay.
it.
Okay. Duendes are goblin-like mythological creatures from South America, also in the Philippine folklore as well. They're little people, just like elves that you've described, but they're more of the red hair type, whiskery type creature.
Right.
Very interesting. I wonder if they could be tossed in on what you've been looking at with the Cherokee little people.
It's very, very possible. I mean, when you really dig into it, you find out there's been little people all around the world. I talked to or interviewed a woman, and the interview is in the book. And she is a descendant of Sali, who is one of the Cherokee warriors and heroes. And she said that they believe strongly that the little people came from space. And their whole philosophy, or I shouldn't say philosophy, their whole belief system is based on coming from the Pleiades. They have some of these stories hidden in their artwork and in their tales about the Seven Sisters. Well, the Seven Sisters refers to the Pleiades. And so the Cherokee have long believed that they originate from the stars.
There was an old film that Disney came out with called Darby O'Gill and the Little People about leprechauns. And, of course, the Irish mythology of the leprechauns seems to echo a little bit of what you've just been talking about.
Yeah, and what was interesting was when I was interviewing this man about the little people still living on his land, I was doing my own research to try to confirm anything that he was telling me, and came across some research that had just come out. And it was a man, I cannot think of his name right now, but he's an expert in southeastern Indians. And he said that there was a major flood in Europe, especially in Ireland, back, you know, thousands of years ago, and that these people escaped and landed in Savannah and then went up the river to Tennessee, where this man lives. If that's the case, the little people may have come with him, and that might explain why they look totally different than the ones we have around here that either look like, you know, that primarily look like Cherokee.
What is it about this region where you get UFO reports, Bigfoots, underground bases, and now these little people?
Perhaps the bases started because there's a lot of caves and stuff beneath the ground. So if you're trying to build underground structures, it would be easier to construct them by expanding what's already there. That might explain some of it. The Whiteside Mountain being like an omni might be another reason that ships come in here. I don't know. That's the best I can do right now.
Is there any chance that these little people could be extraterrestrials?
Like I said, when I interviewed the Cherokee woman, she definitely felt that they were from the stars. And I know she was speaking for more than just herself.
But recently from the stars, or had they been here for thousands of years, let's say?
I think they've been here for a long, long time.
And they stopped coming?
Other than the one incident with this man in eastern Tennessee, you don't get too many lively reports about little people. I occasionally hear stories from people who live in what I call the more remote areas of the Cherokee Reservation, who say there are still little people, and you hear the stories about them putting out food for them, and if you don't put the food out, they get mischievous and start tossing stones on the rooftops, and so I still hear stories like that. It's really hard to get these people to kind of go on the record about it, but they will tell you once they begin to trust you.
Why isn't this area, because of skeletons being found and everything else, being either preserved or put on a historical registry or investigated by the university out that way?
Well, that's why I'm really disappointed with the university here. I think there's
that would be Western North Carolina?
Western Carolina University in Cullowhee, North Carolina. And I have made multiple contacts. I even went to the they don't call him a president, like the provost of the college.
Yeah.
And went to his office. I've done letters. I've talked to his wife. I've tried to do a lot of things to get them to be forthcoming about these kind of things. Ironically, even within the last few years, they continue to cover things up. I got a report from a man who graduated from Western, and he said that when he was a student, he and his buddies were down by the river just horsing around. And the head of security came by carrying a box that was a little bit bigger than a shoebox. And somehow they got into a conversation with him. And the man was rather bluntly open with them. And he said these were some of the little bones they found when they were doing particular construction.
Well, that's pretty dramatic.
He was taking them and going to rebury them on an ATV trail.
That is dramatic indeed. Mary, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take phone calls with you about some of the things we've been talking about, but I also want to get into one of your other works called Tangible Evidence of Jesus. This is an amazing story as well. All that and much more coming up in just ahead on Coast to Coast AM.